Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you. Can you believe that we are already halfway through September? I mean, the fall is just going so fast. And if you've been listening very regularly, you probably caught some of my best of shows last week. I was able to take some time off and have time with my husband celebrating our anniversary. That was really exciting and much needed. And I'm trying to practice what I preach and go with the habit that I had for last week. Every week since January, we've been introducing a healthy habit. Gotten a lot of emails about that, which is really exciting. And if you're wondering what are these healthy habits? Well, you can go to any podcast platform. You can go to AFR's podcast, AFR.net, and find the Dr. Nurse Mama Coaching Minutes. And for every week, I just have a 1 minute short mini podcast that tells you what that healthy habit is, and you can listen to them and take inventory and see where your family is. And this month in September, we've been talking about loving each life stage that you're in, just finding contentment in whatever life stage that may be, whether you're planning a family, in the middle of raising a family, if you are empty nesters, if you are a married couple, if you, whatever stage of family life you're in, we love each life stage that we're in and find contentment there. And last week was finding rest, because we need to do that absolutely. So you can go to the Dr. Nurse Mama Coaching Minutes and you can get caught up and give yourself a quiz and see how you're doing. And thank you to those of you who have sent in emails or contacted me to tell me about how just making small little changes, doing these stackable habits, these things that we can insert into what we're already doing, how much they are changing your family life. And I am really looking forward to early next year having some testimonies from different families who have experienced that and sharing some different stories about what God is doing. Because we need some good stories in this world. We are continuing to have an avalanche of bad news come through our phones, our televisions, any screen, any digital media. I'm telling you, I feel like dread every time I open it up, because I think, what awful thing is going to have happened in the world since I last looked at a screen? And it hasn't even been that long. And even when we're looking at today, of course, we're seeing news of another school shooting. Today, I saw news of pagers simultaneously exploding. And I still don't even know very much about that story, but still know that it's terrifying to even think that that is possible. And thinking about a world where kids are growing up thinking, can that happen? Is my phone going to explode? I mean, they probably don't even know what pagers are. We're having to explain that. But when we explain it's a digital device, this is a new fear unlocked. That's actually a TikTok trend that you may see a lot of kids talking about, new fear unlocked, and thinking about just how they have come to live in a world that is saturated in fear. A world where they learn to fear new things all the time, and they have just accepted this as normal. We've had a second assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. I mean, all of these things are so scary for kids that are living in a world where it just seems like bad news is coming at an avalanche. And so we're going to bring you some good news a little later in the show today. We're going to be talking about See You at the Poll. And if you listen to this program on any regular basis, then you know how much passion I have for Gen Z, Gen Alpha that's coming up behind them, and how convicted I feel about our need as adults in the world, whether you're parents or not, any living, breathing, caring human adult who cares about the next generation that's coming up. We really need to equip and encourage them to navigate this world that just seems full of scary things. And, you know, a lot of people ask me about this generation and why they're so anxious and why they're so depressed and why there is a mental health crisis. And I definitely think a lot of that has to do with living at the speed of a smartphone. We just don't understand how difficult it is to live in a world where you're constantly on. I mean, most of us grew up in a world where the TV went off at midnight. We would see hear the Star Spangled Banner. There was no programming. There were no smartphones, even when my kids were growing up, and my kids are not that old. But today's kids don't live in that kind of world. They live in a world that never turns off. They also live in a world that seems extremely dangerous. Now, if you're growing up and you're thinking, you may have heard me talk about this before, in past generations, we have the greatest generation. You know where you were on D-Day or VE Day. You know where you were. Baby boomers know where they were, and they can remember when JFK was assassinated. Gen X, like myself, we know where we were and what happened when the Challenger exploded. And millennials know where they were on 9/11. And we have to remember that Gen Z and Gen Alpha are the first two generations that were born in a world post 9/11, post TSA, post terrorist attacks, post the smartphones just delivering all of the world's bad news in lightning speed to our kids' phones. So for us, it would take a few days sometimes to get information. It would take longer to get images of that. You know, I remember when my oldest daughter was born, we just had access to the internet. And I remember my in-laws were in another state, and I desperately wanted to send them a photo of my daughter, but I had to print it out and mail it. In the meantime, they did give me this URL, but it was so long. But I wrote the whole thing by hand on a note card, like trying to get my in-laws to look at this, because I didn't even have email at the time. Think about how much the world has changed. Now she's in college, and now we have instant access, where a lot of these things that happen, we actually not only see them very quickly, we see them happen live. I think about when I was watching coverage of the Boston Marathon bombing, where I saw people injured right before my very eyes. These things happen live and they are unfiltered. And this causes kids to feel really unsafe. And so as adults, we have to have conversation with them about that, guiding their conversation. Now, if you are like I am, when you see all of this bad news coming, we start to get anxious and we cling to information because we want to be more informed and we want to feel somewhat in control. So we find ourselves listening to the news maybe more than we usually do, or checking our phones more than we usually do. And I've shared with you that my own kids have challenged me to stop the doom scrolling, that we don't want to just continue to scroll through social media seeing all of this bad news. So in the world of bad news, I really want to encourage you to think about how you are consuming news and media as a family. Where are you looking for influence? Now, I have had a few questions, well, more than a few questions, about Taylor Swift's recent endorsement, presidential endorsement, and asking what I think about that. Well, I am going to actually talk about that on Friday. Every Friday, I have an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama show where I answer listener questions, and I'll be talking about that. But to give you a preview, it's really all about influence. And one of the greatest pieces of encouragement I can give you is that research shows that the greatest influencer are our families, our close relationships. Those relationships that we have much greater influence even than celebrity culture. And that's something that we have to steward really, really well. So we want to think about, how are you looking at the news? How are you intentionally having conversation with your family? How are you engaging in conversation about these things? Because I'll give you a spoiler alert, if you lead with lecturing, well, that's not going to really give you the best influence that you have. If you're not going to be in, if you're leading with arguing, you can't argue your way into right relationship. And you have to choose your battles on some of these things with which we disagree. I've been hearing from a lot of parents, especially parents of young people who are just about to vote for the first time. And maybe they don't believe the same way. And the parents are starting to get panicky, you know, know, because we're thinking, have we done our job? Why do we disagree on these things? So sometimes it's about finding common ground, even if it's just a 1-inch square, and starting from that place and working to build your relationship so that you can cultivate that influence. So great questions to have instead of leading with lecturing, for example, on the Taylor Swift issue, which I promise you I'll talk about on Friday. Instead of leading with lecturing, lead with questions and say, how do you decide what your values are? How do you decide which candidate you're going to vote for? Where do you get your information? How are you preparing yourself right now for election day? Who are you listening to? What are they saying? And what do you think about how they're saying? How do you verify what they're saying is trustworthy? And we can approach this, especially for adults talking to younger people, because the world really is different, and we can share our experience of voting in past elections and who we voted for and how we came to that decision, and asking them and cultivating really trustworthy influences. That can be a really difficult challenge to do, but I encourage you to do it. One of the things that I've been talking about, I will continue to talk about during this election season, is that a lot of us are feeling afraid and angry about what is going on in the world. And when we have the news going constantly, then feeling our kids see us, the news is making you afraid and angry. I don't like it when you're afraid and angry, because now I feel kind of afraid and angry too. And I feel like I'm not sure what's going on in the world. And so I don't want anything to do with what is making you feel afraid and angry. That's a coping mechanism. But if they can see our passion going into a certain topic, a cause that we really believe about, a value that we hold very dear, our faith, things that inform that, we need above all to make sure that we're conveying to our children and to our families, whoever is at home in your family, that we know that we serve a God who is in control. We know that God will never leave us, that God will never forsake us, that He is not pacing the floor of heaven, wringing His hands, saying, oh no, what's going to happen next? We have to remember that. And articulating that out loud to our families is such a great exercise for us, and it's beneficial to them. So saying, this issue makes me really upset. It grieves my heart. And here is why. Here is why, because this is what I believe that God says about this issue. This is what I believe that God has called us to do. And I this grieves my heart, just like I know it grieves God's heart. And here's what I'm doing about it. Here's how I'm feeling about it. Here is what I'm planning to do. That is really important to do. So I know I'm talking about the same thing a lot, but I know I need this reminder, and I know that you do too. So as we're continuing to steam forward to the presidential election, I really want you to think about, where are you getting your information from, and how are you sharing that with your family? How are you stewarding the influence that God has given you with your family? It is a precious, precious gift. And sometimes, like I said, you have to choose your battles. You may not be able to talk about all the things and get on the same page on all the things. So start with the thing that's the most important to you and ask, okay, what is most important in this moment, in this issue, with the people I love under my own house? Is it important to be right, or to be in right relationship? And sometimes it's more important to be right and to have courage to say that thing. And sometimes it's more important to be in right relationship so that you can cultivate that relationship to have influence with your kids. Well, when we come back, listen, we're going to talk about See You at the Poll. And this is so exciting to me, to see kids gathering together at their school, praying for their classmates, praying for their teachers, praying for their school, praying for their future, seeking hope in a God that does not disappoint us, and a God who does not disappoint. So that is an encouraging thing that we can see in an age where we see a lot of college protest and unrest. This is a place where we can find hope. So when we come back, we'll talk about See You at the Poll. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Day, your worst day, some Tuesday or your birthday. Every day's a good day. Now let me tell you why. If you got air in your lungs, you got blood in your body, you are a child of God. Come on and sing it, somebody.
On my best day, I'm a child of God. On my worst day, I'm a child.
Welcome back, friends. I love that song, I'm So Blessed by Kane. On our best day, we're children of God, and on our worst day, we're children of God. So whether you're having a good day or a tough day or just a run-of-the-mill, just kind of nothing going on day, we are blessed. And we are blessed today to have Doug Clark on the show. He's the National Field Director for National Network of Youth Ministries, and he has worked with this organization since 1990, and he helps coordinate See You at the Pole each year. Now, this is an event where students gather around the flagpole to pray. And I will tell you, Doug, I was a student, a high school student in the, this pains me to say it, as my kids would say, the previous century, the 1990s. And I participated as a student when See You at the Pole was just starting out. And now, you know, I've seen my kids participate in that. And this is such a great thing to talk about. So I'm so glad that you're here. And I would just love for you to start by just sharing your testimony and how you got involved. And then we'll get into how our listeners can get involved.
Great. Thank you, Jessica. And thank you for devoting airtime to talking about how we can pray for students and how we can encourage them to pray, encourage them in their faith. My personal testimony is that here we have an event that's focused on schools and helping students pray in schools. I'm a product of that kind of ministry. I grew up going to a mainline church when I was very young, but I left it. And when I was a junior in high school, some friends invited me to be part of a group called Young Life on my campus in Southern California. And because of their love and the community that there was on my campus and the fact that my Young Life leader pursued me, I gave my heart to Jesus Christ when I was a junior in high school and immediately got involved in wanting other people on my school to know. If there'd been a See You at the Pole back then, we probably would have done it. That was before See You at the Pole. And then ended up going into church ministry in Orange County. I was a youth pastor for 16 years and have been with the network now for 33 years. So that's my story in a nutshell.
Well, I love that. And I think that in a day and age where older generations, mine included, are kind of pessimistic about the youth of today, just seeing them as snowflakes, entitled, mm-hmm. just, you know, really a lot of, I mean, pick any negative adjective you want. And there's a lot of pessimism about this generation. But this is an event where I really feel optimistic. And I think it is so beautiful to see their courage, to see their optimism, to see their hope and gathering together. And this is a student planned event. It's not just one day, but it's a global week of student prayer. So talk about the event itself. Tell us what is going to happen next week.
Well, in a nutshell, again, See at the Pole is one day a year, the fourth Wednesday of September, when students are invited to plan and prepare a time of prayer before school starts, usually a half an hour to an hour before the first bell. And they meet at their school flagpole, hence the name See You at the Pole, P-O-L-E. It's been happening since 1990, began in Texas. It actually was started and inspired by a group of freshman students in the spring of 1990. They were the inspiration for the event happening in September of that year across Texas. And immediately there was so much momentum in it and energy around students praying that they thought there might be 5,000 or 6,000 students that would have done this. But in reality, there were over 50,000 that participated, and it already had spread by word of mouth to three other states. And so it has just grown from there, and would anticipate hundreds of thousands, if not a million, students praying this next Wednesday at their school flagpoles for See at the Pole.
You know, I don't want to skip over that too quickly, Doug, because we have a lot of listeners in Texas. It started in a little town called Burleson, Texas, which a lot of our Texas listeners will know where that is. It wasn't a big city that you have heard of. It was just a group of kids in one youth group in Burleson, Texas. And like you said, even that first year, they had almost 50,000 kids on 1,200 campuses. And what did you just say, a million students this year? Is that right?
We could have a million. We're anticipating growth from last year. It had grown about 35% from 2022 to 2023 as we were recovering from the emptiness of the pandemic season. We had to really pivot as everybody else did during that time. But it's really picked up momentum this year, and we're excited. And it's See at the Pole itself, and there's so many other things going on around praying for schools that I'm excited about.
Absolutely. And I think that's just important for any young people who are listening. And we've had other guests on who have talked about revivals breaking out on college campuses, which they almost always, revivals are almost always started, as I'm starting to learn more about the history of revivals, in the hearts of young people. And these are just young people who are at their youth group who felt a need to look for hope on their school campus. And I think, you know, Doug, being a mom of four kids who were in high school during the pandemic and being a pediatric nurse practitioner, seeing the social, emotional injury that was caused by all of the isolation during COVID has had rippling effects. I mean, we're almost 5 years out from COVID and you're still talking recovery. So how did you change during and post-pandemic? You talked a little bit about the momentum you're seeing. Tell us more about that.
Well, we knew we had to go online, and so See at the Pole created a 30-minute package that we put on YouTube, and then we had that go live at 7 a.m. In each of the American time zones. And so we basically had students introduce a time of prayer, and then there was an opportunity for people to pray, and then they would introduce another topic, people would pray. And so it was a guided time of prayer that we put up on our See at the Pole YouTube channel. We're glad to see that there's been a rebound again in 2022 when it was much more live again across the country. And then it increased last year, and we're anticipating an increase again this year as well.
Because I think that students are looking for hope. And being able to provide it in this way is so important. And one of the most common questions I get about things like this, Doug, is that, is it legal? Because we're talking about praying at school, and there are a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of misinformation about students expressing their faith in a school environment. So what is that like? How do you navigate that?
We did have some challenges to see the poll being allowed. on some schools in 1991, the first year. And actually, there were two students that first year in a little town in Illinois that were arrested and put in the back of a squad car for not stopping praying. And they knew that they had the right to do that. It wasn't intended to be a protest, and Youth at the Pole is not political that way. But the students had the right to pray, and the principal didn't like that they were doing it. So he called the police, and two of them were arrested. But in the middle of the 90s, some public interest law firms worked with us closely, and they worked with the administration and actually established very clearly a very broad cross-section of legal groups, including not only like the Christian Legal Society and the American groups that are on the Christian side, but there were the Jewish Defense League and other groups that the ACLU that said specifically that Youth at the Pole was a legitimate expression of free speech on campus, and that became the policy of the U.S. Department of Education. And so if you go to their website and look up Youth at the Pole, you can see that now even. So it's very legal. Students have the right, free speech rights, and they're doing this before school starts. They're doing it outside of the classroom. And so it's been established very clearly to be a legal thing for them.
And you have some information on your website for guiding students through that. So if you go to SYATP for seeyouatthepole.com and look at their frequently asked questions, there is some information about praying at school being a constitutionally protected form of free speech that was affirmed in regard to the Equal Access Clubs by the Supreme Court decision. And so there's some more information there. And Doug, one of the things that you advise through your website is if students who are praying are told by someone from the administration or someone in authority to stop praying, you recommend that you move your prayer time off campus and then handle that with an adult later if they want to go back and speak to that authority, because this See You at the Pole is about praying as free speech and not, as you said, a protest. And that may be difficult, but I think that it's important for parents to talk through to their kids and talk through. I mean, you just said that two students were arrested, so that can be kind of scary for some parents. So talking through what might happen and what they should do should that happen, because this is student-sponsored. This is a student-sponsored event. So do you have anything else to add to that or words of advice for parents as they prepare their kids to participate?
Yeah, I think it's important to keep the focus on what Youth at the Pole is, which is an opportunity to pray for their friends. And if they're told not to do it in a certain way, and then they can exercise that in a different way, then they shouldn't make an issue of it at that point. Come back, I think, with their parents to revisit it with the administration and say, how can we work this out so this doesn't happen again? How can we help you understand as the administrators the legality of this so that you have all the information that we believe should be available to you? But in the moment, the opportunity is to pray. And so if that means going out to the sidewalk or across the street and continuing to pray, then do it that way.
So what do students usually do at See You at the Pole? What does this look like? I mean, it's a week, but there's a specific day that most students, that'll be Wednesday, will be gathering. What are they going to be doing? What will it look like?
I think most See You at the Pole gatherings begin with one student taking the lead and welcoming everybody. There generally is somebody leading a little bit of worship. We do encourage students not to make it an entire time of worship, although worship is prayer, but to focus on spending time praying. So they'll do that with a large group and then praying in small groups, sometimes gathering back at the end to close in prayer. But we want it to be about prayer primarily. So that's the important thing. And often ends with donuts. So we have to throw that in there as well.
That's right, because it's the morning.
Bring the donuts.
Exactly. Right. If it was at night, it would be pizza. So yes, if you feed them, they will come for sure.
But you understand youth ministry real well.
I do. That's right. That's exactly right. And the cheaper the pizza, the better. You know, that's usually how it works.
Right.
But you know, Doug, you tell them also there's something they should do after See You at the Pole too. How does this continue? It's not just a one-time event. How does the impact continue? And what should they do after they participate?
Thanks so much for asking that, because the real heart of Student at the Pole is to be a catalytic event, to be a springboard for a year-long recognition that God has placed them on the campus to be ambassadors for Jesus. And so when they come together, often what happens at Student at the Pole is students look across the circle and go, I didn't know that person was a Christian. I've seen them in my algebra class. I didn't know that person was a Christian. You know, they're on the, in the gymnastics team with me. And so they start identifying other believers on their campus, and it becomes then a gathering event to continue to reach out and to represent Jesus at their school. So continue to pray, yes. And so we've partnered with a group called Claim Your Campus. All this information is on the Student at the Pole website, where they encourage students to form a daily prayer group, and so that there's prayer on every day of the school year. Starting a club can often be helpful, and sometimes it's the club that actually initiates and sponsors the Student at the Pole itself, like Fellowship Christian Athletes or a Christian club on the campus. But to ask God, what do you want us to do next? We've been very careful about not prescribing an agenda after Student at the Pole, because we want them to learn to listen to the Lord and do what he would have them do. And so there's a lot of different ways students can reach out and become hands and feet for Jesus on their campus throughout the school year. But forming a prayer group every day would be one thing, a Christian club, but asking God, what do you want us to do next, and listening for what his direction might be.
Well, I know from research and science that prayer is so helpful for healthy people. It really improves your mental health. It decreases feelings of anger. It decreases feelings of anxiety. It decreases student risk-taking behavior, which is really, really important. And so this is such a great thing for students to do, a positive way for them to direct their intention and their intention to really express care and concern for their fellow students. And, you know, Doug, it was not too long ago, I often will go to schools to do to work in the clinic for the day. It's kind of when I'm mostly in academics now, that's where I go to interact with kids. And, you know, it was one day not too long after the shooting that happened at the Christian school in Nashville. I was lacing up my sneakers and getting ready to go. And I realized for the first time, I really kind of felt nervous and afraid to go. And I thought, is this how students feel every day? Well, I think that a lot of them do. Well, we're going to talk with Doug Clark about See You at the Pole. And when we come back, we're going to talk about specifically what you can do, no matter your age or life stage, to support a See You at the Pole event. You won't want to miss it. And we're going to talk a little bit more about youth and spiritual awakening and what God does through kids everywhere. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Doug Clark from See You at the Pole.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
So I won't be shaken. I won't be moved. My God is faithful. My
Welcome back, friends. That song is Speak to the Mountains by Chris McLarney, and a good reminder for us all that God is in control, and He is God of the mountains and God of the valleys. Wherever you are, God sees, He knows, He cares, and He loves you very, very much. And we're talking about students today, finding hope in that kind of God. We're talking to Doug Clark with See You at the Pole. This is a gathering that will happen next week, mostly on Wednesday, but you may see any day next week students gathered around a flagpole praying for their teachers, praying for each other, praying for our nation, praying for the world. And I'm telling you, Doug, I see students today who are hurting. They are looking for a place of hope. They're anxious. They're afraid in a place where they should feel safe. And we've already talked about the benefits of praying and the health benefits of prayer and how students can find hope in this kind of event, just to be encouraged to see other kids who pray. And I would love for you to go back and walk us through to talk about the impacts of students who pray, even starting way back in the spiritual awakening in the 1790s, and how it's led to where we are now.
Yeah, one of the things that is most encouraging to me about being in youth ministry is to pray that God would visit us again with another moral and spiritual awakening in our country. And in my reading about spiritual awakenings, it has almost always been in every spiritual awakening that we've had in the history of our country, it has always been young people, college age or younger, who have been at the forefront, at the vanguard of those spiritual awakenings. We think of the Haystack Prayer Meeting, and we think of the student volunteer movement. We think of the 1903 Welsh Revival that spread and was global, was actually started in, it exploded in a youth group. So young people have always been at the forefront of it. And so that to me is tremendously encouraging. And it's interesting that the Barna Research Group has just released, and they've been doing a really thorough study about Gen Z. And one of the things that they found is that 87% of teenagers are optimistic about their ability to make a positive impact on the world. And so the opportunity to encourage them to pray and to lead and be ambassadors on their campuses fits well with the mindset of their generation. They want to make a difference and they want to be challenged. And so we want to surround them as adults with encouragement and motivation. And the very fact that See at the Pole is a student-initiated, student-led movement helps them to own this on their campus as they begin to pray too.
I think that is encouraging to hear that so many kids are optimistic about what they can do. And prayer is a really important part of that. Prayer is powerful. Prayer changes things. Prayer is something that is worthy of putting your attention towards. Now, there's going to be a lot of students who are doing that, who are praying. What is the role of adults here, Doug? What should they do and what should they not do? Because there's an answer for both of those.
Yeah, there is. What I just said about students owning it means that we as adults need to work hard to equip and prepare students of all ages to lead the prayer time on their campus, because then they're going to own what happens next. If we do it for them, then they're going to look to us for what the next steps might be. But adults can pray around and alongside students in this way. I think one of the things is that if it's not too late, is that any of those who are listening might go to their pastor and say, could we take some time this before See at the Pole? Could we take some time to, in a sense, commission Christian teachers and Christian students to be missionaries to their campus by having some time to pray in our morning worship service? They might need to make that call today in order to get that done by this Sunday. But moms in prayer groups are uniting and praying for students all over the country. This Saturday on the 21st, and then on the 28th, the following Saturday, we're encouraging adults to do what we call a prayer walk project, which is to go and pre-prayer, if you will, the campus by walking and praying for the school on Saturday. And there's information on our website that'll direct them that direction. But walking and praying for schools is something that's powerful. The network launched something that the ministry I work with, that we had a time of prayer walking back in August that we call Footsteps on Campus. And so adults praying is the most important, encouraging students to take ownership, being their cheerleaders, and coaching them in every way they can. All those things help students to step out and lead.
And what should they not do? What are things that they should leave to the students, or are there any other considerations? Because I see on your website there's a lot of really great information. I would encourage our listeners mm-hmm. who are interested in participating or supporting the event to go to SYATP, see you at the polls, SYATP.com. There's actually a page of frequently asked questions that ask about mm-hmm. who is this for? You know, who can participate? And one of the questions is, can the teachers participate? Or, you know, can the school, what is the role of the school administration? How do you work with them? Because the short answer is that that's a little bit complex. And there's a lot of great information you can find here if you really want to participate individually. But do you have any overall guidance for any of those boundaries?
Yeah, I think that the best advice I can give is prepare the students, encourage them, then step to the side and let them lead. So that may be another circle across within sight of where the students are praying, or across the street, or maybe it's gathering at the city's courthouse, city hall, that kind of a place, or the church, and praying, but letting students know, we're praying for you, but we're going to let you lead this. And so we encourage adults to be supportive and do it visibly, but to let the students actually lead. So better to not be in the circle with them. If they're younger children, just for security reasons, I think it's really important that parents remain there and stand nearby as the students pray, and just for making a safer event.
Yes. And, you know, I'm going to say something that's probably going to step on some toes. So here's a disclaimer right here up front, Doug. But, you know, I think in this world where we see so many things as adults, as parents, that concern us, that worry us, I worry about the visual that kids have of our faces as adults illuminated by screens looking for answers. Scrolling through news, scrolling through social media, watching the TV, they see our faces glued to screens. It's called fubbing, which is phone snubbing, or technoference is another term that's been used by. But here's the thing, Doug, that I'm going to say that will step on toes, mine included a little. How many times do they see our faces in prayer instead? How many times do they see our faces turned to heaven, our heads bowed, our heads, you know, our faces turned to the pages of Scripture? This is a great coping mechanism. This is a great healthy habit to have to deal with all of the stressors and the worries that we have, is to turn our faces in prayer. And you said something that I think maybe a lot of listeners may not have realized, that this can even include younger kids. And so what does that look like? This is even happening on elementary schools. Is that right?
Well, it has happened. It hasn't been an area that we have pushed in terms of our promotion. We've mostly focused on middle school, high school, and college students to promote See at the Pole. But when God's moving, he's moving. I'm not going to get in his way. And when you have moms praying every week for a moms in prayer group, for example, and they want their children to participate in this too, there takes a lot more work to prepare those students. Sometimes it's actually scripting out what they say, going with them to meet with the principal, making sure the principal knows that they're going to be nearby, and that the students will be done by the time the first bell rings and they'll be in class on time, those kinds of things. So there's a lot more hands-on leadership that's involved for younger ones. But people are praying on elementary school campuses as well, and so we just have to recognize that that's happening.
Well, and it's also happening in other parts of the world. I think 66 countries is what you have mm-hmm. counted. Is that right? Tell us about how this looks in other parts of the world.
Sometimes it's expat students have in American schools around the world, but 66 different countries have done See with the Pole on all the continents except for Antarctica. And maybe there, but I'm just not aware of it. I've been working closely with leaders in the Philippines and Canada and Australia this year as they're planning Seat at the Pole in their countries. So it's exciting to see that it is a global movement. This Sunday, by the way, there's going to be an International Day of Prayer for America where people, and this isn't just a youth event, but they'll be praying literally around the world for us for 24 hours, which is kind of a humbling thing to think about.
That absolutely is. And so tell our listeners again where they can go for more information to learn about either how their students can lead a CU at the Pole at their school. It is, like I said, a student-led event, or adults who maybe want to get involved or be supportive, or churches. Where can they go and what can they find?
Yeah, everything they need to know, they can do CU at the Pole for free. They have plenty of time. It's 7-8 days away right now. But on our website, syatp.com. And if you go there, it tells you how to get prepared, free downloads if you want to prepare some handouts and those kinds of things. And then we'll have a reporting mechanism that'll be up and available next week for Seat at the Pole. But syatp.com.
And this year's theme, you have a theme for this year. It is based on 1 Timothy 2:1 and called First Pray. Can you tell us about that?
That is the instruction that Paul gives us there is, first of all, the first thing we do is to pray. And so we're encouraging students to recognize that if they love their friends and if they love their leaders, if they love their city, if they love their school, the first best thing they can do is to pray. And so I like to say it like, first of all, pray, but first of all, pray. So depending on how you emphasize the wording there, it's the first thing we should do.
It absolutely is. And I think of all of the coping mechanisms that we have for the stress that we feel and what we model to our families, whether that's doom scrolling or caffeine or, you know, whatever it is, we, first of all, praying is so important. Mm-hmm. And I want to actually read this from 1 Timothy chapter 2, because it's such a good reminder for us, Doug. It says, first of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. This is good, and it is pleasing in the sight of God our Savior, who desires all people to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. I mean, that is just such a great message for today, and a great way for us to model to our kids that in times of difficulty, in times of trial, whether you're Paul writing from a prison or whether you are, you know, a teenager today writing from a social media app, praying is such a great way to deal with that. And we just so appreciate everything that you've done. Do you have any, as we close our time together, Doug, any story maybe that you want to share about something that God has done through this event?
Well, I've heard so many stories of people coming to know Christ through CU at the Pole. One of my favorite was, if you can picture a group of students praying around a flagpole not far from where buses are pulling up, in a high school in Oklahoma City. And youth pastor relayed this story to me, that as one bus pulled up, a young lady got off the bus. She looked over at where the students were praying. She turned around, sat on the curb, and began to weep. And a teacher who was standing there came over and asked her what was wrong. And she pointed over to the students. She said, "Those kids, they're praying for me." Now, she wasn't close enough to hear their words, but she could feel the presence of the Holy Spirit working through those students. And that teacher was able to lead that student to faith in Christ right there in front of her school that morning, and then go over and introduce her to the people who had been praying for her so that she could become part of that community on the campus. I experienced that as a junior in high school. Every year that happens on high schools and middle schools all over America, and we'd like to see that happen again this year.
I think it is just such a great expression of care and concern. And when, you know, when kids have the opportunity to pray for each other, It's pretty impressive. And I think about, again, from Timothy, don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech and word and deed. And when there is something that's really humbling about hearing a kid pray for you and just hear the words of hope that God has placed on their heart. Well, listen, you can go to syatp.com. That's syatp.com. Look at these frequently asked questions. What is it? Who can be there? Who can participate? How do we publicize it? What happens with the media? All of those things are right there for you. So regardless of wherever you are, I want to challenge you to pray for See You at the Pole. Do it right now so you won't forget. Just do it right now and do it every time you think about it. May the Lord bless you and keep you and make His face shine on you. And I'll see you right here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.